We are flirting with climate disaster.
The Sustainable Hour.
For a green, clean, sustainable Geelong, the Sustainable Hour.
Welcome to the Sustainable Hour. We'd like to acknowledge that we're on the land of the Wathaurong people in this very special week for First Nations Australians. It's NAIDOC Week. We'd like to acknowledge that we're broadcasting from stolen land, land that was never ceded, always was and always will be First Nations land. This week gives us the opportunity to drill down further into what it means. The ancient wisdom that we refer to week after week, just what that involves for all of us. In the resultant ancient wisdom that they've gleaned from nurturing both their land and their communities comes so much of the answers, the solutions that we need as we face up to the climate crisis. It is now more important than ever that non-Indigenous Australians become allies, because there's so much for us to learn in that. Their whole being centred around being part of the earth. The earth was a living entity, an entity that they had a responsibility to nurture and to do no harm. They were completely in tune with nature, and that's the essence that we head into the treaty making in Victoria, in this state anyway. Right, healing begins when harm is named. They know that water will guide and fire will teach us. The stars will sing when we take the time to listen. We're playing a song later today, and I'm very much using the lyrics from that, which Mick created with a bit of assistance from technology. Words drawing directly from that. Song lines have been drowned in pipelines, kinship traded for control. But in a world that forgets, we remember, and that's our responsibility. We carry the culture with us. And we are still here, walking, still here, protecting what protects us. So our future will be strong and safe. Learning takes time, and that's what we need to do so badly. We need to learn to listen and take the time to do that. So let's reflect on all of that during this, the 2025 NAIDOC Week.
Australians, who are we? Well, we are about 26 million of us, and roughly 3% identify as Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islanders. But over half of us have at least one parent who was born overseas. And nearly 1 in 3 Australians were actually born overseas themselves. As myself, coming from Denmark, and then choosing to make Australia my home. And last year we had this big national conversation, you could say, about whether or not the First Nations people should have a special voice in Parliament, where people then asked, why should a little minority group of 3% get a special voice when all of the rest of us don't? We all get to vote. And as we know, with slogans like, if you don't know, vote no, the answer to the voice across this immigrant country was no. Today we'll talk in the Sustainable Hour about why that was really a missed opportunity, especially when you come from a nature or environment or climate perspective. Because that First Nations voice could have brought some of that deeply valuable wisdom that Tony is talking about into our parliament. But before that, let's get our regular look at what's happening around the world. Colin Mockett, OAM, what you have in your global outlook for us this week.
Yes, Mick. Well, my roundup begins in the South Pacific island nation of Tuvalu, which is a pretty small place to begin a world roundup. But it's really interesting this week because more than a third of the citizens have entered a ballot for a world-first climate visa, which would allow them to permanently migrate to Australia before climate change swamps their nation. The first intake of the ballot went on sale last week, and it demonstrated that Australia's resettlement program is very much oversubscribed, because there are only 280 visas being issued to Tuvalu citizens this year. Hence the government-organised random ballot. The visa program was introduced by Australia's Foreign Affairs Department as a landmark response to the threat of climate-related displacement in the South Pacific. There were 1,124 applications for those 280 visas. They were all submitted to the Tuvalu ballot as of June 27th, last week. And that accounts actually for 4,052 Tuvalu citizens with the inclusion of their family members. The island nation is home to 10,643 people. That's according to the 2022 census. And at just 5 metres above sea level, Tuvalu is among the most climate-threatened nations in the world. Now, the winners of the ballot, which costs $25 to enter, will be granted what is called the Pacific Engagement Visa, which grants indefinite permanent residency in Australia with the ability to freely travel in and out of the country. I should point out that that $25 isn't much to us, but the average wage in Tuvalu are around about $430 a week. So it's a larger sum for them. Now, the visa will also provide for Australian support on arrival in this country, such as the ability to study at schools and universities at the same rates as Australian citizens. Entry to the ballot will close on July the 18th. And just to recap those numbers, 1,124 applicants representing 4,052 people, and they're applying for just 280 visas. Now, that's just one of Australia's responses to the climate crisis. The new class of visa was created as part of the Australian Tuvalu Falipi Union, which was announced in 2024, which includes a commitment to defend the island in the face of, quote, natural disasters, public health emergencies, and military aggression. For the first time, there is a country that has committed legally to recognise the future statehood and sovereignty of Tuvalu, despite the detrimental impact of climate change-induced sea level rise. That's Prime Minister Feliti Teo, he said in a statement last year. That was after the NASA scientists had predicted that the majority of Tuvalu's landmass would be below the level of the current high tide by 2050. So they're buying raffle tickets in order to try and get out at $200 a year. But now to New York, which is a lot bigger and a lot more vibrant, I think you could say. And scientists appear to have solved the very difficult problem of providing battery storage to the city that never sleeps. Now, the difficulty isn't that the lights of Times Square are on all the time. It's really because the majority of people live in apartments and don't have the opportunity that we Australians have to put panels on our roofs and batteries to capture spare energy. The development of renewable energy projects is central to the state's climate goals of reducing emissions from fossil fuels. Solar and wind power are planned to develop in tandem with battery storage. The solar and wind power wasn't really that difficult, but they've had huge problems in finding a way to store the surplus energy. And they need this for when nature isn't there to provide wind or sun. battery storage is aimed at easing any shortfall. Now, since 2019, 6,193 battery storage projects have been installed in New York State. But the new project has been providing smaller, more efficient neighborhood-sized battery systems. For example, it's developing two battery storage systems to power neighborhoods in Staten Island. Each battery system can provide a capacity of 4.9 megawatts. Now, that's a fraction of what a large-scale project has to offer, but with several advantages for dense city environs. On a hot summer day, the two systems on Staten Island can supply power to an estimated 9,800 city households for 4 hours, the equivalent of 9.8 megawatts. And the plan is to provide a network of small battery systems all located within New York City itself, usually on top of skyscrapers, and also connected to a local utility. Customers would sign for the battery storage along with the power that they use. So they've come up with a system of battery storage that works for their skyscraper community. But now to another big city, Sydney, whose council unanimously voted to ban gas appliances in all new homes within months, joining a growing list of councils moving towards all-electric buildings. Under proposed new planning rules, developers will be required to install electric cooktops, ovens and indoor heating and cooling systems in all new homes. Now, this takes the phase out of gas a step further than our state, Victoria, where the state government last week brought in a law stating that householders will be required to replace end-of-life gas hot water systems with heat pumps or other efficient alternatives from May 2027. So they're saying, we'll do something in 2 years' time. Sydney is saying, we're banning gas immediately. So if they can do it, why can't we? Now, there was a range of new electrification regulations that were unveiled by the Victorian state government last week. The rule changes all required all new homes and most commercial buildings to be built all electric by January 2027. It's a move that the Allan Labor government says will cut home energy bills by $880 a year, or $1,820 if they have solar. The new home electrification rules were part of what was called the state government's gas substitution roadmap, and that's part of a gas security statement which set measures to avoid potential gas supply shortfalls as coal exits the grid. That's their actual wording from their media release. Coal is going to exit the grid. In truth, this is a soft pullout from the government because they could do it tomorrow at the stroke of a pen if they wished to. Sydney has shown how it's done. Finally, news of the Conference of the Parties. That's the COP annual meetings of world leaders on climate change. As we previously reported, Australia has bid to host next year's COP in Adelaide. This year's is being held in Brazil later on this year. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese said, "I can't think of anywhere better than Adelaide to host that event," without any trace of irony at all. A decision on the hosting was expected this week, but it's been delayed. The world's major climate conference sees no need for urgency, and we know this from past COPs. Anyway, an Australian government press release last week said COP31 in Adelaide would amplify the voices, perspectives and solutions of the enduring custodians of our lands and oceans, Australia's First Nations people and the Pacific communities, for the benefit of the regions of the world. Now, that's a wonderful thing to happen on NAIDOC Week, isn't it? Our government's, recognising our own First Nations people and it's going to be helped by hosting the COP talks in Adelaide. Australia's pitch has always stressed the vulnerability of Pacific nations. Their drowning is the argument for our hosting the COP31. Now, as the department said in its issue last week, the impacts of climate change are already affecting our region. That is why we're committed to hosting a COP in genuine partnership with the Pacific. Now, I wonder what the people of Tuvalu holding their $25 raffle tickets think about that. But it's a nice thought to leave because it's the final one for my roundup for the week.
Listen to our Sustainable Hour for the future.
Our guest for our NAIDOC special episode for 2025 is Yaren Cousins Bundle. She's at Gundjid Chimara Job Wurrung Yuin Binjara, mother of four. She's a whale dreaming custodian, founder of SOPEC, the Southern Ocean Protection Embassy Collective. She's a cultural coordinator for Saltwater People Org organization, a national collective of grassroots First People Saltwater Nations for Songlines and Cultural Heritage Protection. So, Yaren, you keep yourself very, very busy there. Lots to talk about.
Yeah. Thank you very much for the opportunity to get our voices out there and our stories heard.
Yeah. We're talking to you today from the Grampians, the Hall's Gap. There's been a gathering there of First Nations people.
Yeah. So up here in Garryward, we call it. Everyone, sort of knows it as the Grampians. That's one of its special names and its traditional names, Garryward. And they had the Treaty Assembly chamber meeting up here, or the full chamber. And, that was a tour of country. So they went out to Bundjil's Cave and a few other places out on country to some cultural heritage trees and... I think that was a big thing for the treaty to come out on country and to make that time to be on country. So there's some good things happening in that space. I just finished the Walk for Justice, and I think Victoria's really gearing up now. We're in that space. A lot of mobs are treaty ready.
Has that given a renewed spirit, I guess, to First Nations people?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's given us like that renewed hope, or that old, keep the fires burning energy that, we've got something really positive to work towards still. And, the failed voice referendum, really spoke to how racist this country is, and how much we've really got to deal with that within government policies as well. So treaty, locally, there's talk about local treaties within each mob to make the treaty whole and more of a base of coming from all aspects of our mobs, whether that's a cultural lens and working in health and welfare and education. And, it's sort of across the board that I think, treaties where we're all looking to now, or where a lot of mob, had faith in that and knew, a lot of us grassroots mob anyway, knew that, what the voice was really about, and it just gave platforms to, target our mobs in a really negative way to a lot of racists. And we've seen that, with Jacinta Price and the Liberal government through the elections. And, so treaties just, I think, that hope that's always been sitting there like our sacred fires, we're just got to keep them burning,
And the treaty, what will this mean for your people?
Well, for my mobs, I think we've got some really good reps, and we've got really strong mob in a lot of you know, the main issues that affect our people, you know, and a lot of mob are still living in poverty, and it's 2025. So I think it's about, like, yeah, raising the living standards. And I think our mob are pretty equipped to do that, whereas other mobs are still gathering, you know, and that's, yeah, information and mob to represent those causes. But I think, yeah, there's just a lot of positive movement underneath, you know, the negative things that we hear going on, new gas and mine approvals and different things, that, yeah, we have a lot of hope about what our people can do if given the chance and listened to. And treaty, you know, is a really good platform for really white Australia and the rest of Australia to meet us halfway. And, you know, we talk about, there's so many talks about reconciliation, and that's a huge thing. We're the last country to treaty. So, yeah. And giving NAIDOC Week, giving that a platform to, you know, discuss all of these issues in the broader public arena, you know, is really good. And the likes of me and some other family do try and get more of that message, more of our messages amplified during this week, where we're more likely to gain a bit more public support.
So, yeah, we're almost... Well, halfway through the week, what can we look forward to for the rest of NAIDOC Week as regards to Gunditjmara Mob?
Well, official events, I think, you know, the community, we always have community events, you know, with the elders and the young people, and the different local orgs have all got different events going on. But, yeah, for me personally, NAIDOC Week is about, you know, sharing stories and sharing, you know, those yarns and those really, really important yarns about protecting country. And so up here on Jabiturong country, where we're living at the moment, I'll be doing a mural at the local school and... Yeah, engaging some of the local school kids in some of the local, you know, custodian stories here and the different landmarks that relate to the local area, and bringing people into the story. In, you know, there's a place of belonging in the story of what the future of Australia could be, honouring our place as First Peoples, and yeah, what that means in NAIDOC Week is, you know, really important. We're going out, actioning what we're talking about as well. So we're, yeah, going into community, sharing stories. We're also going out on country, and we're also visiting these story sites and paying deep respect to our ancestors and those stories that we're connected to. And also for me and my family, we are the water defenders, part of our creation business and law that some of the women and me and my children carry is about water and protecting the fresh water as much as the salt water, and all the different songlines and stories that connect to these, you know, ancient bodies of water. And we go out on country visiting these natural springs, and we spend a lot of time, you know, speaking to country and speaking to the water. And last week we done the Black Cockatoo Dance out on country after our winter solstice whale ceremony down on Gunditjmara country. And we sung the rains, and it was amazing with all the elders present, all the matriarchal elders and all the old fellas there, and all the young people were up dancing. And then it rained across Jabiturong and Gunditjmara country for 3 days. And so those stories are the stories that I want people to know about. And I want to share, you know, these stories that we're out on country and we're singing up our country, we're dancing up our country, that's our culture. And if we follow our cultural obligations to care for country, it's really going to balance out a lot of the negative effects of what we're dealing with today. And, you know, it stems from right from the land rights fight, right back to, you know, the stolen generation and all the different effects that have happened to my people throughout colonization. Those effects are still current now. And it's all stemmed from loss of land, loss of culture, and loss of identity through loss of country, you know. So those are the important yarns, I think, to get out there in NAIDOC Week and let people know that, you know, mob are out there practicing culture and a healing country, and we believe in that, and because we know that it works. You know, we sing that natural spring and then the water flowed out of the ground. And that's really, you know, part of what we do. And that's just, you know, one of the solutions that First Nations people have about caring for country and sea country.
Yeah, and we hear every week we begin the Sustainable Hour with an acknowledgement of country. It's usually Tony who does it. And he always ends with saying there's so much wisdom from the first peoples who have, that has been acquired over, you know, thousands and thousands of years of living, not just on country, but really in togetherness with the environment in so many different ways. Can you sort of explain to us the depth of that connection and how you could say the knowledge, the wisdom that we're talking about here could help in the climate crisis?
Oh, definitely. I think that's one of the most important yarns to date. We need to be in really demand of government and industry right now about First Nations wisdom of the land, sky and sea and how we move forward in climate crisis. First Nations people all around the world have had solutions for years. It's just that we're not being listened to. But when it comes to the First Nations, you know, oldest living culture in the world, there's so much complex, you know, really genius knowledge about how the natural world works. And we have language names for that. We have special ways that we connect into that natural world is a lot through our mother tongues and the vibrations of what's inside of us and what's on country. And so it's really about, you know, being at one with the natural world, and that's our mother. She nurtures us and we reciprocate that love. And so love is about, yeah, understanding the different ecosystems and the living elementals of country, which is your fire, your water, your air, all of the things that the Western world doesn't fully recognize as living, and therefore they become separate, whereas our world, we're one. And so, you know, when we're speaking about the land, sky and sea, and we're connecting up, you know, the different ways of how we speak to those different elements of country or those different parts of country, you know, there's a lot of different methods of how we understood that. So it's astrology. You know, first scientists and different what people would call alchemy medicines of the land, and basically our food was our medicine. So we lived in tune, and there was a real time reciprocal relationship, and those kinships, you know, the reason why many mobs are connected to different animals, different totem animals and spirit animals and plants and elementals is because each person that is connected to a different part of that has a responsibility to care for that. And then it literally becomes like a tree of life, all connected. There's the roots and the trunk and the bark and the leaves and all the different parts that make up the whole. And so, yeah, part of what we're really wanting to share is, yeah, those fire knowledges and those water knowledges and those star knowledges, and be able to help, you know, really care for the future of everyone and the planet, really. But also in full acknowledgement of my old people and all of the ancestral people and beings of this country, and that cultural knowledge and the way that that cultural knowledge is shared. The way that we share is, you know, you earn that knowledge, you earn that respect to go to the next level of learning, you know. And yeah, throughout history we've seen, you know, First Nations voices and knowledges be put to the side a lot of the time, or even some of those knowledges taken and remade in a different version, you know, culturally appropriated and used without permission. So that's something just really important to acknowledge, that, you know, these knowledges come with law, and you know, the understanding of that law is really important. We can talk to scientists and archaeologists all day, but whether or not they understand that, you know, to have the right connection to that knowledge, we're not going to, you know, the government's not going to use it to advance mining or something like that. We have to keep those knowledges safe. But also the main factor of that, I think, you know, growing up, dedicating my life to learning about our business and making sure that, you know, our culture's not lost on our watch, that it's passed and handed down and continues, you know, and comes with us. We bring our culture with us into the future. So, yeah, the main aspect of sharing those cultures is knowledge is that we could talk to archaeologists and scientists and all different marine biologists and everything, but whether they have the right spirit way for that knowledge to sit in their body and spirit, for them to take that knowledge on and retain it and understand it and not have that knowledge be whitewashed in any way, you know. And that's a really important part about sharing those knowledges, to, yeah, acknowledge that there's a way of living and being and sharing, you know.
Yeah. Would I be right in saying that white fellas generally, to get this, we're going to have to learn to slow down?
Yeah.
Breathe in the country, walk in the country.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you're on the right track, Tony. That's, you know, really important to, you know, this world, this modern world is very fast. And, you know, we've got these fast internet and fast transport and everything. And sometimes, yeah, the time that it takes to learn the lesson is the time that it takes to weave that basket, you know. Long time if you're a slow weaver. And, yeah, to take that knowledge in and slow down to the pace of your heartbeat without the anxiety of what's happening to the country and war around the world and different things that we have to deal with in society. That's something that we always come back to is, yeah, slowing down to your tumtumpa, your heartbeat, and walk country the same way. And if you just move a little bit slower, it might open up all of those senses, you know, that we have, and country will begin to, you'll see the signs, and country can speak to anyone. And it's just, yeah, if they know how to listen. we want to amplify the stories and the solutions in a climate crisis. You know, we're talking about like seaweed farming and revegetation, you know, to endemic species, wedge-tailed eagle and dingo protection and re-establishment, restoring the ecosystems to what they were. And yeah, it's a huge job. You know, there's a lot of invasive species across country that are making it very hard in that caring for country story. And mining industry is huge, is the biggest threat that we have. And we're all on borrowed time fighting the mining industry. It just seems, you know, that's why treaty is very hopeful for a lot of our mob on the ground that are out there defending, you know, birthing trees and sacred songlines, you know, river sites where ancient burials have been there for a long time, and all these different things are being disturbed in the country now. And so I think it's really important to speak about what's happening now. You know, while everyone's off celebrating NAIDOC Week, which is a really positive thing for our young people, and I really support that, you know, bringing culture to the forefront a little bit more. But while, you know, this is happening, the destruction is happening as well. Yeah, out on our sea country and Gunditjmara sea country, as we speak, it's happening. You know, the seismic or the gas exploration and extraction, and it's in the middle of Kuntable season. It's something that, you know, is very close to our heart in defending, because it's connected to our children and connected to their identity and their place of belonging on country just as much as us older whale dreaming custodians. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's something that you know, we've been part of a really great campaign to save the Southern Ocean, but there's elements of that we're unable to block. You know, I was saying to my sister girl the other week that I wish I had, you know, a boat like Steve Irwin and some of the, you know, Paul Watson crew, and we'd be out there defending, occupying our sea country and defending it. But we're just not resourced to do that. And that was one of the things that I wanted to speak about, actually. SOPEC would like to make, you know, a public demand to the federal government this NAIDOC week: put your energy and your resources where your mouth is. And we want to see the federal government support a marine rescue unit and a whale entanglement, you know, vessel along the southern coast of Australia. In each state would be great, but especially along the migratory routes of most large cetaceans in the Southern Ocean. And we would like to demand this NAIDOC week that the federal government resource that. They've just cut all this funding to the fisheries in Victoria, and they've just approved a major gas port in Corio Bay. And they're, in the middle of gaining royalties to all of the new gas approvals across Gunditjmara Sea Country. And we see this as completely unacceptable. We've got, you know, seismic vessels out there and rigs out there now. You know, they're blocking the song lines, they're blocking the pathways of these beautiful Kuntable, our ocean ancestors, our ocean family. And we're also worried about the giant wind turbines. But we don't see any marine, you know, animal veterinary services for injured marine life. It was all through fisheries, as far as I'm aware. Minister Murray Watt, you know, do your job and look after the environment and look after the coast and the sea country. And, you know, you can't just take from that sea country anymore. We need resources. We need those vessels along the coastline for whale entanglements and other, you know, ghost nets and plastic retrieval. You know, we just saw Woodside's industrial plastic wash up from them plugging one of their old wells in Gunditj Mara Sea Country, and the plastic washed up from around Tirundara, around Yambuk and Narrawong there, all along the coast to around Port Campbell. And I'm not sure if it got past Apollo Bay, but that's a fair stretch for industrial plastic, you know, and there's been no cleanup. As far as we know, there's been no, you know, reparations of damages. There's just been these massive corporations and government getting away with trashing country for mass profit and extraction. And a lot of that gas goes overseas. So we want the federal government and the federal environment minister to, yeah, look at the major problems that are affecting the Southern Ocean. And we don't have any rescue resources down here or medical resources along this coast to treat them. There's only a few of us and official, you know, professionals that have had to carry the load for many years. So that's one of our NAIDOC demands.
Yeah, and if there are any of our listeners that would like to be able to support those demands, how do we, like, we could we include something in our notes about that?
Yeah, maybe just to contact, you know, the federal environment minister and, yeah, demand they listen to First Nations people in caring for country, but specifically resource the Southern Ocean for marine rescue and marine veterinary resources.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, and I think some of those resources should, you know, include vessels big enough to retrieve ghost nets and, you know, teams, yep, that are resourced to do plastic retrieval.
Yeah.
Like the amazing beach patrol down in Warrnambool that just they're cleaning all of Gunditj Mara beaches, and, you know, they're challenging what's coming out of the ocean from the humans, and it's really good work. These massive corporations don't care about damaging, you know, any of the natural world, but they also completely dismiss First Peoples' birthrights and cultural rights. You know, our birthrights are our cultural rights to practice our culture, and they're hindering our practice. They're trashing our country. And our country, those living elements that I mentioned before that we have to speak to and care for, yeah.
And a treaty is am I right in saying the treaty aim is to stop all that?
I think, yeah, there's people in the space. I definitely would want, you know, full ancestral birthrights, you know, land rights, water rights. I think that's there's not too many people that are speaking about that. But at the same time, there is talk about, you know, some economic benefit to our communities. But I think, you know, overall, it's a bigger picture yarn, and there's all those different elements. I just think that cultural heritage protection and protection of country is, like, our country is our identity. It's part, yeah, of who we are, and, you know, it should be at the root of all other decisions made around First Peoples and for treaty. And, yeah, I just don't think the federal government is fully ready for the truth yet. But I think our people are sick of, you know, we've been yarning for years. The truth, we're bringing the truth whether people are ready or not now. So, yeah. Even next week I'm going up to Lismore for the National Climate Dialogues Gathering. There'll be First Nations from all across Australia going to Bundjalung country, you know, to pay their respects and yarn about how we move forward in a climate crisis and what us First Peoples, you know, in our communities are doing. We're not waiting for the government to listen to us anymore. We're just doing it. And hopefully people will start to recognise and support, you know, that we're actually fighting for a better future for everyone and everyone's place of belonging, and support us. Country can speak to anyone. It's just, yeah, if they know how to listen.
I stand on the earth. I breathe with the land. The rhythm of its heartbeat weaves in with my own. I give it all the time it needs.
Slow down to the pace of your heartbeat. Tum-tumpa, your heartbeat.
The treaty begins when truth is spoken. Healing begins when heart is named. Water will guide, fire will teach.
Listen.
The stars will sing when we learn to listen. We sang the rain, and the rain came. We danced the land, and the land moved. Our sacred fire never dies. We'll wait for you to slow down. Sit down and learn to listen. The treaty begins when truth is
This modern world is very fast.
Listen. Healing begins when heart is named. Water will guide, fire will teach. The stars will sing when you learn to listen. We are the river, we are the land. The eagle watches, the whale sings. We don't own these stories, they flow through us. Every rock is a page of a living law. Every tide a verse of an ancient truth. Song lines have been drowned in pipelines, kinship traded for control. But in a world that forgets, we remember. We carry the culture with us. And we are still here, walking.
We're not waiting for the government.
Still here, protecting.
To listen to us anymore.
Protecting what protects us.
We're just doing it.
So our future will be strong and safe. Learning takes time. Learn to listen.
Our country is our identity. It's part of who we are, and you know, it should be at the root of all other decisions made.
NAIDOC Week, a time for reflection, certainly, and responsibility, taking responsibility, something it seems like our political leaders simply cannot face. We know what needs to happen. We have the tools. We have all the solutions. What's lacking, as we know, is political will to get it done. And I think also the media plays a big part in this, because there's no clarity. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of confusion and even lies being spread in media. So that's why we are in the mess that we are in.
That's right. Yes, and I think we can go back to the very opening of today's show, which acknowledges NAIDOC Week. And it's something that Tony acknowledges every single week, that the First Nations people of Australia didn't damage the land that we have really brought to the brink in something like 250 years. And we can learn so much from their care of the land over thousands of years, not just a couple of hundred years that we've been in control, thousands of years. And nobody, it seems to me, nobody is looking at that overall picture and saying, hey, look, they did this and they did this and they did this and they didn't build huge, great quarries and sell coal around the world. What they sold was wool, which growed and it's renewable. Well, even then, they didn't do that initially. That was our thing to do it. They just existed in harmony with the land. And yes, it's certainly something that I think we're due. There's enough Indigenous voices in Parliament now to actually remind cabinets at all levels of just how we're not listening to the voice. And of course, we all know that the people turned down an Indigenous voice last year because they thought it was, they were sold the idea that it was discriminating positively towards the First Nation people. In truth, it would have been wonderful to have got their input, the Indigenous Australians' input into where we go in the future, because we've certainly got to go somewhere different in the future.
Yeah, the really good thing here is, as we learned today from Yaren, is in Victoria that's morphed into a campaign to get a treaty, and truth-telling is so much is the start of that. So, yeah, I think that just listening to Yaren's impassioned, passionate talk to us earlier in the show just shows that, yeah, there are First Nations people that were deeply offended by it, but they didn't give up. And like, this is the oldest continuing culture on the planet, and they didn't give up over that, and they're driving the future, which is getting us much closer to learning their ancient wisdom, taking it on, and actual following their practices, which is, you know, that so many of the solutions that as we face up to the climate crisis. We're just zooming through life without stopping to smell the roses. I guess that's the closest I can get to the analogy of appreciating what we've got around us, which is very much what First Nations people, that was the essence of their existence, was what nature was telling them. And we're too busy to listen to that.
Yes, yes, and we're frequently in a hurry to go nowhere too. We're driving our great big 3-ton four-wheel drives to and from shopping centres to buy Coca-Cola and consume it and get fat. And that's progress in Australia in the 21st century. We need a sort of a complete rethink, a jerk, a pulled up. We need somebody to get hold of us and say, look, this is wrong, this is stupid, let's do things more sensibly in the future.
Yeah. Well, Yaren very much did that in this show, I feel, in her words. Yeah, it's a real wake up and let's do this together. Let's share the knowledge that we have.
That was all we could fit in a NAIDOC Week special sustainable hour. How do we get out of here? Well, Colin.
Be mindful, be aware, and be thoughtful of the future. Be like the First Nations people.
Yeah, be Indigenous.
I don't think I can do that. I can think like one, though.
Yeah.
Be ready to learn.
Be open.
Open, yeah. Yeah.
Open to learn.
I hear you, Mother Earth, not in words, but in the silence beneath the trees. A heartbeat in the soil, a whisper carried by wind. The soil breathes, the trees remember. Tending the earth as she has tended us. We came from you, and to you we will return. Every breath we take is a gift. Every drop of rain is kindness of planet Earth. Return again to the land of fertility.
A finding, willy-nilly, really, of what is important in life.
Return again to what we once knew. How we listen, it's how we care.
Everything, everywhere, all at once. That's the change that we need now. An entirely new world is possible. We don't have to sacrifice communities and ecosystems in the pursuit of never-ending economic growth. Hundreds of millions of people can see the outlines of this new world, and they're taking action for climate justice to make it a reality. We will win. The end of the age of fossil fuels is inevitable. What you can do is help us win faster. Join the global movement and take action today. Talk to your friends, family, and work colleagues about climate change. Tell your elected politicians to take action on the climate and ecological crisis and that these issues are important to you. Find out what your place of work is doing and help empower it to become a positive force for change. Connect with groups, locally or online. Working with others can amplify your power. It can also make long and lasting friendships. We all have a role to play. It's our future. Let's work together to make a world that we're not afraid of, that we would love to call our home.
Go to climate.film. Watch, share, do.